And we are, once again, the Nonprofits. I am your host today, Russell Glasser, and with me today is Linnea Daly.
Hello.
And first-time Nonprofits contributor, Jay Davis.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. This is both a happy and sad occasion for the Nonprofits, because it is probably going to be the last show we ever bring you. Yes, that's right. By next week, it will be May 21st, and we all know what that means. The world is over. It's been a good run.
Armageddon is imminent.
Well, it's just going to be the rapture, though, so, I mean, I don't know. We'll still be around, right?
I suppose we could still keep broadcasting during the apocalypse, but it's going to be kind of hard with, you know, nations at war and whatnot.
Yeah, and the audience is going to be
spinning off the Antichrist.
And my ISP is probably going to be on fire. That's always inconvenient.
Now, there'll be so many dogs and cats that we'll have to take care of because they didn't get raptured, but their owners did.
I didn't sign up for that.
There's that one guy that runs a website that fleeces.
Yeah, he's going to be a busy guy.
Yeah.
You know, I saw someone email the radio station that maintains the We Can Know website.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, when May 22nd comes around, can I please maintain your website? And the webmaster said, no, because I don't think it's going to happen because we don't know the date. The Bible says we cannot know the day. So, their own webmaster doesn't believe in them.
The webmaster does not believe them. That's, well, I mean, you need a certain amount of education and ability to be a webmaster. So, I'm not surprised that they have people working for them who know better.
But the thing is, he's just as crazy because he still believes that that will all happen.
Yeah, that's true.
He just is not putting a testable date on it.
Richard Dawkins had his own reaction in a prestigious forum that we don't get to talk in. The Washington Post, apparently he does some kind of column every once in a while or some kind of Q&A thing.
They reach out to him periodically.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I mean, you know, it's nice to know that at least the most famous atheist is able to get mainstream press. And they asked him the question, family radio evangelist Harold Camping believes that he has calculated the exact date of the rapture, May 21st, 2011. While many are laughing, Camping's followers are taking him seriously, bringing his message of impending doom to billboards and public spaces around the country. What does your tradition teach about the end of the world? How does end-time theology impact real-world behavior? So you might expect the answer to be, what a stupid question. And in this case, you'd actually be right, except with the benefit of a marvelous British accent, which should I attempt to duplicate it? Just for a couple of sentences.
Sure,
this is how I imagine Richard Dawkins sounded. Why is a serious newspaper like the Washington Post giving space to a raving loon? I suppose the answer must be that unlike the average loon, this one has managed to raise enough money to launch a radio station and pay for billboards.
Exactly.
I don't know where he gets the money, but it would be no surprise to discover that it is contributed by gullible followers. Gullible enough, we may guess, to go along with him when he will inevitably explain on May 22nd that there must have been some error in the calculation. The rapture is postponed to, and please send more money to pay for updated billboards. So the question becomes, why are there so many well-heeled gullible idiots out there? Why is it that an idea can be as nuts as you like and still con enough backers to finance its advertising to acquire yet more backers until eventually a national newspaper notices and makes it into a silly season filler? I won't waste any more time on that, but I do want to mention a less trivial point arising from the question posed by the Washington Post. What does your tradition teach about the end of the world? It's that word tradition that should raise our critical hackles. It refers to a collection of beliefs handed down through generations as opposed to beliefs founded on evidence. I think that gives a good flavor of it. Just search for Richard Dawkins on the Washington Post talking about end of the world.
I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yes.
And I think further, I first read this link on P.Z. Meyer's blog, Caligula, which I'm no doubt many of our readers are familiar with. And I think he made an excellent point. While it's easy to point out that this we can know, and Harold Camping, his particular take on it is BS. The important point is that it's all BS. It's not just his, it's going to be the 21st, all that end times eschatology stuff, I think deserves the same amount of ridicule or at least critical application as this Harold Camping guy and the whole we can't know debacle here.
Yeah, you're right, Jay. It's not particularly less BS than the typical religious claims. And it's kind of funny to go around seeing all the Christians ridiculing him by saying stuff like, oh, how ridiculous that Harold Camping thinks he's predicted the end of the world, when everybody knows that Jesus said we wouldn't know the hour. Like, okay. You still have crazy, unfounded beliefs.
Have you seen the billboard for it right here in Austin?
I have seen two billboards for
two.
It, I think.
I've seen one
on southbound I-35.
There's one on southbound I-35.
Yeah, there is.
That's a primo billboard spot.
Sure is, yep.
That's not cheap.
Yeah, so it's right around, I mean, it's a couple miles north of downtown. And I drive that way home from work every day.
Just so that people who aren't in Austin or Texas think we're not all crazy, we also have a Planned Parenthood billboard facing the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's new.
It's been there for about a month.
Okay.
But, so, yay, we're not all crazy.
Yeah, which coincidentally is about the length of time that congressional Republicans have been threatening to defund the whole thing. Because 90% of what they do is abortion. Disclaimer, not intended to be a factual statement.
I wish we had a good segue into abortion, because that would have been nice, but we don't really. I would like to point out, though, that I'm really glad that he's calling out this newspaper for covering such a trivial topic, because, you know, part of the reason that they get so much publicity is that people are giving it to them, and it's lending them some kind of legitimate, you know, legitimate claim.
Yeah, they've been on the news, several news stations, of course, making the rounds on the web, and, you know, we're talking about them here.
And
to some degree,
I object to all the coverage that's going on, I said, after spending 10 minutes on it.
But I think that kind of dovetails, and to some degree that sheds some light on this, on some of just the outright crazy thoughts that religion can lead you to. And I think in that respect it's good, and if it sparks some discussion, like I said, if this can kind of be a slippery slope. If you get some... Maybe you're engaged in this discussion about this topic with a theist, and you get them to concede, well, hey, this guy Harold Camping's a little off his rocker. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Or, you know, at least he doesn't have any real factual or, you know, real evidence for this position. That's kind of a chink in the armor, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe a wedge to get in there and to get someone to open their mind and say, well, hey, if this guy's totally off of it, there's not any real reason why... People claiming the other arguments or the other positions on the rapture or the Armageddon and such is accurate as well.
Possibly. I mean, it's a little optimistic in most cases, but in the very tiny minority of people who do listen to us and say, I started out as a theist and now I've changed my mind, most often what they say was triggering that was basically... You know, I saw these other crazy beliefs, and then I asked myself, hey, is mine any better? I mean, I've seen some pretty long and interesting stories that go exactly that way.
You know, it's a feature that I miss, speaking of all this rapture stuff, is the Rapture Report. I wish we still did that.
Well, the website that was keeping track of them all and making it convenient is gone.
It's convenience, I see.
Yes. And also, you know, it's Jeff D. who was doing it. But, I mean, I bet if you want to take up the manual, the mantle and go hunt for stuff, then feel free.
I wouldn't even know where to start looking.
Yeah, well... I mean, next year is 2012, so I'm sure there is ripe territory to mine right there.
That's true.
I don't know if it's something in the collective unconsciousness, or, you know, the eschatological myths that various races and religions have had. But there's something, I dare say, romantic, maybe not romantic, compelling, about, you know, or maybe it's even fetishistic, about the whole end of the world thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that it's the end of the world, it's we are the select few who see it coming, and we're the ones who will be saved from all the horrible stuff.
Yeah, something I should say, it's one of the more dramatic aspects of Christianity, too. I mean, the Bible kind of ends on this crazy tripped out note in the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something that, like I said, it's dramatic, a little bit compelling, you know, the finale, so to speak, that unfortunately so many Christians look forward to and regard as a good thing. And that's another reason religion is not my cup of tea.
Right.
Yeah. Too true. All right. Dead air.
Okay, well, do you want to do the next one, or do you just want me to do another one? Or do either of you? Okay, what? Too late. What? I'm starting.
What?
Okay. Jump on it faster next time.
Okay.
In lighter news, a pastor who regaled family and parishioners, this story is coming from MSNBC, with tales from his time in the Navy SEALs, is backtracking after his story turned out to be nothing more than a self-described ego builder, according to reports. Reverend Jim Motes, a 59-year-old pastor at the Christian Bible Fellowship Church in Newville, Pennsylvania, was exposed after the Patriot News interviewed him for a story about life in the elite force. It didn't take long for readers to spot the missing elements in Motes' account. His story was full of gaping holes that any SEAL could see straight through, explained Jason Artola, 39, in an email to the Patriot News. It's very infuriating to have these posers claim the honor that many good men have earned and died for. Let's see. Don Shipley, a retired Navy SEAL who says he has access to the database containing the names of all SEALs, told the Patriot News that the pastor was never part of the team and had never served in Vietnam, another claim made by Motes. According to a report, Motes' son, who served in Iraq together, made a plaque for their father honoring the elite fighting force and related Navy units. Although it doesn't bear his name, the honor hung on the pastor's wall, inviting questions. He had never before corrected wrong impressions. Motes said he lived his dream vicariously through his sons. It's an ego builder, and it's just simply wrong. In that sense, I've been living this lie for the past 5 years, he said.
And then did you say the source, first of all?
Yeah, MSNBC.
All right. Then it goes on to say that his family knew about it, and he was lying to his congregation about it, and then someone asked to do a story.
Well,
what does it conclude with? Are there consequences or ramifications to his actions? Is he under any particular...
No, I doubt it. I mean, it's not against the law.
It is
against the law?
Yeah, it's the stolen honor law. I think it's in that same news article. They're probably not going to pursue it because this guy is already getting shamed all up and down the entire world for what he's doing. But yeah, no, it's illegal to pretend that you were in service when you were not.
But to what degree? To just say it or to put it on your resume? Because I think the thing that started it was this one gentleman who actually impersonated it to a pretty egregious degree. This guy is just saying it.
Is good. He's got a medal hanging up, a gold trident, which he purchased at a military surplus store. Yeah, okay, Stolen Valor Act of 2005 makes it a federal offense to falsely claim to have received military honors, but part of the Valor Act was struck down as unconstitutional. I mean, so that's interesting. The First Amendment also protects making stuff up, as long as, you know, it's not something that is dangerous or used to... basically rob people, right?
I can go down to the banana trading company off the airport and get a Navy SEAL cap, you know, and wear that around. But I think my reaction to this is, you know, this is not a huge surprise. This is the first time some preacher or pastor has been caught lying. or with his pants down and has had a fall from grace?
Well, my impression when I first went to a megachurch a few years ago, I noticed this kind of suspicious pattern of a guy. I mean, I've talked about this before. There was a pastor at the church who told these stories about, I mean, they were pretty outlandish stories, and they seemed pretty convenient. Like, there was one about him being a bodybuilder and a mountain climber, and then something happened to make him helpless, and then he used it to make the point that you can only rely on Jesus in a crunch and not on yourself. But it was like, that guy didn't look like a bodybuilder particularly. And so I wondered if it was common to make up these kind of stories or to borrow them from someone else and pass them off as your own. And a Christian friend told me, yeah, I mean, they do that, but it's not really lying. It's just sort of personalizing the story. It's like, you know, telling a story isn't lying, even if the story didn't happen. And, you know, I disagree. It's not that they're on purpose trying to deceive you, but more a sense that they don't really care about what's true in a way.
As long as the message gets across, they can just do it. I don't know. I think that it's not so much that he was doing it just to get a message across. I mean, he said he was doing it for an ego boost, and that sounds like a lot of the stories where people say, oh, yes, I heard Jesus, and Jesus is talking to me, and I have this chosen story. I mean, lying about that kind of stuff has got to be a really big ego boost. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of strikes me as being a very similar kind of lie to make.
Well, I think it's an interesting story. I'm glad it got some publicity because, you know, making that kind of claim is always discreditable.
Yeah.
But I think a year from now, he'll still be probably a pastor at the same church. Maybe he'll be at a different one.
Yeah.
He will be forgiven. he will probably make some appeal to the sin of pride. And it goes to show that, sometimes congregations regard their pastors as only human, and I don't know, maybe sometimes, even though they look up to them, they're supposed to be, role models, you know, and figures of some sort of authority, when they have a bit of humanity to them, and they have a bit of that fall.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah,
and it's not that I think that pastors shouldn't be allowed to be only human, but as Greg Paul was talking about when Don and I talked to him on the TV show last week, people tend to believe that religious people are more trustworthy and that you can't trust atheists in general. Whereas if you break things down with actual scientific studies, you find that atheists may actually be come out slightly more honest and trustworthy than, well, I mean, you know, I don't want to overgeneralize because I don't think it's very conclusive.
Well, I think you're trusting an atheist to give you those statistics.
Ooh,
so what does that say?
Of course he would lie to me.
Yeah. Well, I agree, though, with the fall from grace sort of thing. I mean, I feel like that's almost a prerequisite for being a pastor, is that you have to have some kind of fall from grace story.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
how
like,
which may or may not be
you.
Made up, though, I would point out.
Yeah, no, Darren Brown, when he was doing his expose on faith healing, he made up a story where he got into drugs and then Jesus saved him.
And then you have examples like Ted Haggard. He's gone back and formed another church, and people come to it, and he's a pastor again. Back in the 80s, Jimmy Swaggart, he had his scandal with the hooker, and he kept on doing his gig. He didn't quite lose his job or wasn't totally...
Oral Roberts said that the Lord would call him home unless he received a donation of, I don't know if it was $1 million or several million dollars. But I believe the deadline came up and God didn't send his thugs to break his legs. So I don't even remember what he said after that. They don't care. I mean, they care about being caught lying as sort of a temporary inconvenience. That's something that you have to sort of whine and beg about and ask people to forgive you and stuff. but they don't seem to have that much regard for what's actually true. All right, somebody jump on a story and
okay,
cut off the silence.
One of my favorite fall from grace is Peter Popoff, who is famous for faith healing. And speaking of faith healing...
That was very graceful.
Yeah, I thought so. Oregon House unanimously votes to end faith healing exception.
Yay.
And this is from OregonLive.com. Oregon House approved a bill Thursday that would remove legal protection for parents who chose faith healing over medical intervention when treating their children. The bill passed unanimously, though two Republican representatives raised concerns that the legislation was taking the issue away from juries and sending the state into a slippery slope.
Aw, boo-hoo, you're not keeping up the special exception that allows people of my religion to con people. That's not fair.
To be fair, they did vote for the bill because it was unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to raise a ruckus as some kind of token backpedaling, I guess.
Wait, so they whined about it being unfair and then voted for it?
Yep. They said it's fair, but they're worried about what kind of precedent it sets for the people.
All right. I mean, they can raise concerns, even if they're dumb concerns.
Yeah, so in the past 2 years alone, two children have died, and another has been severely disfigured due to lack of medical care. The children suffered needlessly, and their deaths were avoidable. So they're taking that away from juries and just making it something that's a law, so it makes it
easier. Does it say what is the specific law that is now encompassing faith healing?
The bill would eliminate... Okay, currently, spiritual treatment can be used as a defense against some... And then there's a little asterisk. Some homicidal charges. The bill would eliminate that defense and subject parents who chose faith healing over medical treatment at the expense of their child's life to mandatory sentencing under Measure 11.
Ah. So if you withhold medical treatment and say, no problem, I've got a faith healer... and your kid dies as a result, then you are a murderer of some sort.
Hang on, the asterisk was an important correction.
Was it?
It says, this article previously stated that spiritual healing can be used as a defense against all homicide charges. In fact, it can only be used as a defense for some homicide charges. Homicide. For instance, it cannot be used as a defense in the case of second-degree manslaughter.
Hmm.
I mean, that's not that important of a correction.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure that would be very impressive if I could keep straight which one was second-degree manslaughter and, as opposed to something else.
Yeah, so you can't use it as a defense anymore if you let your child die.
Yeah.
So that's good. Good for you, Oregon, on making that kind of step forward. And it's disgusting that there are these people who get so... caught up with their faith and just dig deeper and deeper that they can't admit that it's wrong and that they need to just go see a doctor.
It's very true. It can have real-world consequences, and that's part of the reason that, we do what we do, not just to be contrarian, but it has impact.
Real-world serious impact. Like in Uganda.
Didn't Jay have a story? I thought.
Yeah, I have something to bring to the table.
Sure. What you got?
We'll get back to you, Gandalf.
As Russell knows, I like to listen and visit various Christian websites and radio shows. And
I'm a fan of that hobby myself.
Okay. Well, for a while, I was kind of thinking that you were thinking I was a little weird for doing that.
Before I had music players or podcast streaming, I used to listen to mostly the Christian station in my car. So,
and I think it's interesting to do to kind of get a take on, you know, where they're coming from, and really their audience is other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to, I wouldn't necessarily say be off their guard, but they're kind of more comfortable talking, I think, within their own environment.
Sure.
And so you get a little bit more insight here. One of my favorites is AIG, of course, Answers in Genesis.
okay.
And
that's great.
Yeah, and Ken Ham and his cohorts. He has a number of. I think he's gone to some lengths to get some accredited scientists, or at least people with educational credentials,
who are bribable.
or at least as committed to Christianity as he is. One of the ones I read is sometimes I look at his astronomer, Dr. Jason Lyle. Sometimes has some interesting things to say, but he's kind of grown tiresome. Really, he's kind of has the same old logical arguments. But I saw this. Article, this blog post from a Dr. Georgia Perdomo. She apparently has a PhD in molecular biology or something like that. I don't know what it specifically says. But she had something to say about President Obama's address to the nation after we took out bin Laden a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
I noticed this too because I saw the president's address when he was talking about September 11th. He mentioned, in the same speech, he mentioned, and I'm quoting Obama here, on that day, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were united as one American family.
No, then that's fairly nice.
Yeah, that's nice. And you know, kind of brings us together in a message of unity. And at the end of the speech, he says, "Let us remember that we can do these things not just because of wealth or power, but because of who we are, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, may God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America."
Yeah, that was still the Obama quote?
That's still from Obama's speech. Now, I've noticed sometimes he's said, one nation indivisible, and he's left out under God, and they gave him a hard time for that.
Yeah.
And I think and this is just me, but as election year rolls up next year, I think he's kind of reinforcing some of that. And he's stated he's a Christian. So if he wants to put that in there, for whatever reason, I don't have a huge problem with that, even for coming from separation church and state. But my point is, Georgia Perdomo talks about this, and this is not good enough. For her, what she says in her blog post on AIG is that my husband immediately noticed the dichotomy of this. He wondered which God the president was referring to at the end of his speech. While he assumed it was the one true God of the Bible, it is hard to know for sure since the president acknowledged a multiplicity of gods earlier in his speech. Of course, this is expected from a president who has also made statements such as this. And then she's quoting the president here, which I am too, where he says, "Whatever we once were, we are no longer just a Christian nation. We are also a Jewish nation, a Muslim nation, a Buddhist nation, a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers."
That was always the case.
Yeah.
And it was. But obviously, this is problematic for her. Then she goes on to say that, she and her husband, got in a bit of a Facebook argument about this. Other Christians were saying, "Why do you have to attack the president over this?"
I love it when Christians fight with each other.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think AIG and Ken Ham's their particular take on it is fairly uncompromising.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They don't allow for a lot of dissent. They don't accept theistic evolution. They don't make any kind of compromise for any of that.
Am I right in remembering that Ken Ham was recently disinvited from some homeschooling network?
He was.
Because he
was, blogged about it bitterly.
He was such an uncompromising douche.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of a pattern that they are the most extreme of the... Well, I mean, they're kind of mainstream, but they piss people off and wind up as their own little splinter group.
Now, it's kind of a dovetail to that. I'm sure you're familiar with Rob Bell and his new very controversial book in Christian circles.
No, actually, who's Rob Bell?
Well, if you're not familiar with him, I think you should be. Rob Bell is a very popular preacher and pastor of Mars Hill Baptist Church in, I forget exactly, I want to say, you can bring it up, and somewhere in Minnesota. But he kind of comes from this Unitarian, not necessarily Unitarian, but a little bit of Unitarian, Universalist they have a word for it, but it's not evangelical. It's a lot more. It's kind of. There's a specific word. I'll find it in a little bit. But basically, he has this kind of doctrine—not necessarily doctrine—but he has a belief that it's very flexible on the idea of hell. Rob Bell's theology, it's quite possible that nobody goes to hell, hell is just a metaphor.
Jeff was talking about that in the last nonprofit.
Yeah, Jeff actually did a long thing where it was like. The Time magazine article or something like that.
It made some newsworthy.
Yeah, and Jeff was annoyed because while all these other Christians were mad at him, it was nearly impossible to figure out exactly what it is that this guy does believe.
It is kind of and from the evangelical point of view, and I've heard a lot of this on Wretched Radio, from esteemed Baptist preachers like John Piper. Sometimes I listen to him to see what he has to say on this. But they think he's compromising quite a great deal, and that the message of hell is kind of they all agree that that's intrinsic to the message of salvation in the Bible, and that if he's getting wishy-washy on hell,
they can't seem to tell the difference between I disagree with you and I want to agree with everything you say, but I'm too much of a wuss to be strong about it. I mean, you know, they can't comprehend the idea that people have different theologies. And, of course, a big part of the reason people have different theologies is because there's actually no evidence behind any of them, and people are free to make up their own shit as much as they want.
Pretty much.
So what's this guy up to?
This guy Rob Bell?
Yes.
Well, he's I think he's preaching a little bit more of a universalist and an acceptance message, and it's not so much the hard line of traditional evangelical Christianity. And it's very popular. A lot of especially among young people, the younger generation.
Right.
And he's kind of being what I've heard from the what the Christian right has to say about that. Is it's this kind of universalist position, this bit of postmodernism that says, everybody's faith leads to the same place, there's no hell.
Well, if this is the same guy Jeff was talking about, then what this guy believes is that there is a hell, but you can still get redeemed even if you get sent to hell. So, you know, you still get tortured, but as soon as you say, I accept Jesus Christ, you're shot up to heaven.
Confess.
I imagine that wouldn't take too long. All right,
you're free to go.
You're actually in hell.
Yeah, I would think hell would be empty within a matter of weeks.
Well, that's what he's saying.
After it's over.
If not seconds, if it's as bad as they claim.
Yeah, so it's kind of ridiculous. It's saying that you'll convert, but you'll just convert later.
Now, word I was looking for was emergent. I think it's part of the emergent church or the emergent movement in Christianity.
Okay.
And that's kind of like garlic and to vampire as far as what the real evangelicals think about it. They're very much dyed in the wool, old school, sinners in the hands of the angry God type.
And so I imagine that the die-hard fundamentalists are annoyed by that guy because, he's perceived as softening their message and making a hell that's not scary enough so that people aren't just flocking in to repent and by the way, please pay some money to my church. Whereas we're annoyed with it because these sorts of squishy, everyone is right kind of theologists kind of mask the fact that they are just making stuff up and have no justification for saying that any of it is right. And they're couching it in this sort of feel-good message that says, again, I don't have to care if my stuff is true. I might as well just, you know, say it's all true and be happy. And exactly. I don't know about you, but I find that kind of believer incredibly obnoxious.
I have to be straightforward. I think so, too. And I have a bit more respect for the positions of more traditional Christians, mm-hmm. who at least realize that
they've got something semi-testable.
Yeah, they realize that they have to more or less take the Bible as true.
Uh-huh.
Because if they don't, or if they say parts of it are relative or not strictly true, then they're in for a major logical problem. So that's why a lot of them realize that they have to adopt this position that the Bible is totally true in order for it to remain consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned earlier, and I've told you before, one of the shows I listen to is Wretched Radio, and Todd Friel, who comes straight out of the Ray Comfort School of Evangelism, he's a protege of the Way of the Master.
Are they actually associated? They are.
Yeah, they're still associated. I mean, Ray's frequently on the show, because Wretched Radio used to be called, it was the Way of the Master radio program.
Okay.
And then it kind of split and did its own thing.
Yeah, but they were
connected. The ties are still there. And what Todd Friel, he often does is he'll go to college campus on a regular basis, and he'll just talk to people about their beliefs. And one thing he tries to do, he gets out there and he tries to ask people, what do you think happens when you die, and whether they believe in hell or not. And basically, he's found out it's basically impossible, or very very rare, to meet people who even say I believe in a God and I believe in Jesus and I've read the Bible and I think it's right. It's still almost impossible to get those people to say, well, yeah, you'll go to hell if you don't accept Jesus as your, mm-hmm. you don't go through Jesus. And he bemoans this as the postmodernist movement having an effect on this. But I kind of admire him. He tries to pin people down on exactly what they think and get them to remain consistent with that. And
I go back and forth. I mean, I realize that that younger Christians are sort of drifting away from this hard line stuff. And I mean, while I do think that it's annoying to talk to somebody that you can't pin down to a specific belief, on the other hand, I want to feel like this is a sign of progress. Like, people are, at least in some sense, very uncomfortable with this sort of fire and brimstone, fairly monstrous theology about everybody who doesn't follow my religion deserves to be tortured forever. And in some sense, I feel like when we argue with people on the show, our purpose is to get people more away from the fundamentalism and make them at least get to a position where they are uncomfortable with the idea of hell. So in that sense, I mean, I guess this thing that Todd Friel hates is a good thing for us.
Yep.
I'd agree, too. Yeah, I think it's a positive thing for critical thinking all around.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of atheists who have moved from, hardcore theology to this more wishy-washy liberal stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know I did that. I had the belief that nobody goes to a horrible hell. You just don't go with God if that's your thing.
Right.
So.
And we get accused all the time of being in league with the postmodernists, which I find kind of offensive because while I find postmodernist entertainment to be kind of, interesting and thought-provoking, the sort of postmodernist take that that scientific knowledge is just another religion, I can't stand. And I do argue for verifiable truth, and in that sense, I don't hang with the postmodernists. But I don't necessarily think that this is a result of people going for postmodernism. It's more a result of these young people being embarrassed by really bad theology, but also, not being comfortable with saying I'm an atheist. And so they really have nowhere else to retreat to except to kind of occupy this sort of cloudy area where they don't have to commit to anything. I don't think that's postmodernism necessarily.
And it's not. I was about to add that they're kind of misusing, and I was abrogating that to some degree, mm-hmm. but they're kind of misusing the term postmodernism just because it deals with the problems of objective truth,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of
mm-hmm.
latch on to that. And when I hear Todd Friel, and usually, almost always when he's saying, oh, that's postmodernism rearing its head again, he's usually more or less misusing the term, but for convenience sake, I know what he's talking about.
Right. Bear in mind that when Christians say objective truth, they don't really mean something that can be tested.
What they mean is, I want to be able to say what I believe, and I don't want anybody to argue with it. I want people to just leave me alone and let me treat it as truth, regardless of what the facts say. That's their objective truth.
I'd like to say that we should be careful about facing towards the microphone instead of away from the microphone. I know it's makes conversation better, but it doesn't make it pick up better.
Yeah, anyway. I didn't mention, we, as usual, we don't have a mixer. We have a one mic setup, although it's an okay computer mic this time.
Yeah.
Hey, it is a guerrilla episode, man. You work with what you got.
Guerrilla.
Right,
we're rebels.
This is edgy.
Yeah. So speaking of modern times ruining religion, this comes from Pakistan, actually, and it's from thenews.com.pk. So that's Pakistan. So it says, the Lahore, I don't know how to say that, High Court observed on Friday that in this era of civilization and modernism, I guess not even postmodernism, attempts to hurt religious feelings of Muslims in world are not only rampant, but the same have increased manifold. So these people are whining that more and more people are hurting the religious feelings of Muslims.
I am concerned about people hurting the bodies of Muslims.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that is a problem in many parts of the country, but I'm not that concerned with their feelings.
Unfortunately, right. Sometimes one leads to the other.
Yeah.
So, they're talking about petitions against publication / display of blasphemous material by a social networking website, Facebook.
That is exactly what I don't care about.
And they regretted the lethargic and sluggish attitude of the government functionaries by not responding to such material with promptitude. And then kind of buried down farther into the article is the more scary stuff. He's basically saying if China can block stuff on the internet, then why can't we do that here in Pakistan?
Ew.
So he says, I want to,
China's his role model.
China is his role model.
Oh, man.
You know, China that disappears people and won't let things happen. Let's see if I can get the quote. If China had imposed complete ban on the said website, why the government of Pakistan was so hesitant in this regard, the CJ asked, and the CJ being?
Probably because those functionaries were too busy hiding from
Chief
the
Justice.
Chief Justice Ajaz Ahmed Chaudhry. I'm sorry for butchering your name, but I'm not sorry for butchering your religion. It's dumb. All of the religions that are hardcore and fundy care about making sure that information about why they're wrong doesn't get out there, because they breed on this ignorance and creating these blinder spheres.
Is there any specific content on Facebook they're talking about?
I don't think they want to repeat
this. I can take lots of guesses.
Virtually everything.
Yeah. I bet it's drawing the prophet.
Drawing Muhammad Day.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
they're
a good
mad
bet.
About that. I bet. I'm betting.
Yeah, and what is the government supposed to do about that? I mean, I guess block Facebook forever.
So what's the practical concerns of that? They have to go to the ISPs that handle internet access in the country, right?
China does it. I imagine it's not hard. I imagine it is hard. It would be hard for us, but if you're a dictatorial government, then you kind of get to control. I mean, you could shut off all the internet.
What happened in Egypt. A couple months.
Yeah, they just did that. Of course, then you know, the people revolted, and now that guy is no longer in power. So when I say easy, I shouldn't be quite so clear.
But then the backlash isn't to end.
Don't mess with people's internet.
But see, that's what's awesome about the internet is that people can compare the way they're living now with every other part of the world, and they can grow dissatisfied when, I mean, this is not, they can't just be told, oh yeah, this is the way it is everywhere, suck it up, get used to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best things about the internet, and there's many positive things about it, but truly the...
Porn!
No argument. But it really does break down borders. It really helps dissolve borders between nations, which are totally man-made and, completely fictional, and we just all agree to it anyway. And it serves a lot of functions, to have national borders and nations as a concept of a whole. But that's all they are. They're just concepts that we follow. And the internet kind of helps blur that away, and I think eventually in the long run that's only going to be a good thing.
Right. I mean, it reminds me of a character in a story I read where he's saying to this guy who's trying to get him to swear fealty to one king or the other that's warring over his land, why do I care whether the armies of one guy trample my crops instead of the armies of this other guy?
Yeah.
It's like, the boundaries between countries are all kind of artificial, except to the extent that they're, people are separated and don't see each other. And the internet makes it so that you kind of have to look the other people in the face. And you've got, intelligent IT guys twittering from... in Pakistan, actually.
Like, yeah, that guy in Abbottabad.
Right, there was this guy who was right there on Osama bin Laden's block, and he was live-blogging.
About
like,
the helicopters.
There's some planes overhead, and then he's like, oh shit, I just live-blogged Osama bin Laden being killed.
Yeah.
And then everybody floods to his Twitter page. It's pretty cool, because you can't just think like, oh, they're all horrible criminals over there who are coddling this guy. You get the actual direct perspective of somebody who lives there, and you see, like, oh, that guy's a lot like us. That's what I would be saying.
And that's why it's dangerous for these officials who are saying this, because they don't want the others to be humanized. They don't want non-Muslims to be humanized. They just want it to only make sense to be Muslim.
And in a broader sense, they don't want a verifiable truth which is not based on their authority.
Yep.
Well, I think it's a good article. I'm glad you brought it up, Linnea. I try to follow the news coming out of Pakistan, because we do still have nation states that are very real to us, and I think Pakistan, obviously, they've been in the news a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at sometimes here in the U.S. we have it pretty good. And we have the freedom to be able to, have an atheist TV show and have an internet audio show about these things. But in places like Pakistan, I feel for non-believers there. It's pretty rough. When you have situations where basically a high-ranking politician or government guy gets assassinated by his own bodyguard, for not even blaspheming, but for just questioning the blasphemy laws. I don't know if you remember that happened some months ago, I think late last year.
No, but I'll believe it.
Yeah. But basically this guy, he was the equivalent of a governor in Pakistan, and he questioned the validity of the blasphemy laws, and he basically spoke out against them to some degree, and he was killed by his own bodyguard.
That's horrible.
Wow.
Who was then praised.
That's
certain,
the kind of craziness.
Yeah, but I thought that was a major story, and unfortunately it was a big setback for Pakistan, but it also highlighted just how kind of crazy it's getting over there, so maybe that'll be a wake-up call for them to make some progress, hopefully.
Yeah, and now, for the most part, people here are allowed to read and say whatever, whatever they want to.
But they can't in Uganda?
You really want to steer me toward that story.
No, go ahead. Do your story. Do this story. We'll get to it later.
Okay, but, I mean, there are some places where you're kind of at the mercy of, even in the United States, of a dictatorial tyrant. And I'm talking about in prison, especially if you're in prison at a jail in South Carolina, where prisoners are being denied any reading material other than the Bible, according to the American Civil Liberties Union.
the ACLU filed a lawsuit challenging the unconstitutional policy at Berkeley County Detention Center in Monk's Corner on behalf of Monthly Journal Prison Legal News last autumn. And this is coming from The Guardian, guardian.co.uk. Last week, a request by the U.S. Department of Justice to stand alongside Prison Legal News as a plaintiff in the lawsuit was granted by a federal judge, and the ACLU has now asked a federal judge to block enforcement of a policy which it claims sees the jail's officials unconstitutionally refusing to allow prisoners to receive any materials that contain staples or pictures of any level of nudity, including beachwear or underwear, effectively banning most books, magazines, and newspapers. Last year's lawsuit quotes an email from a member of staff at the prison to Prison Legal News, which said that our inmates are only allowed to receive softback Bibles in the mail directly from the publisher. They are not allowed to have magazines, newspapers, or any other types of books. Now,
could they get the Crumb Book Bible?
The Crumb Bible? Oh, the comic
the book of Genesis by Harry Crumb?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I doubt it.
Involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I was mean, substantial.
We're all nerds here, and I think everybody is just as horrified as I am at the prospect of not being allowed to read any books. And I think that's incredibly counterproductive for prisoners who are supposed to be, I mean, in theory, they're supposed to eventually get out of jail and become productive members of society. And if you're in an environment where books are not allowed in general, then, I mean, that's terrible. How are you supposed to
ridiculous.
Improve your mind in any way? But then, if you're going to have that rule that no books are allowed, why is it that the Bible gets a special exception? There's only one reason, and that's that there's this state institution trying to push this state religion, and really, it's no better than what's going on in Pakistan.
I imagine that could be probably successfully challenged if, say, a Muslim prisoner, I'd hate to be in their position, spoke up about it, but I imagine that they could.
No, I mean, the Muslim prisoner, they're just going to, I mean, it can be successfully challenged now, I'm sure.
To get at least other religious books and material in there, but yeah, I agree, that's not the point.
To them, the Quran's of the devil.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, why only religious text, or why only the Bible, obviously. It's silly. I'll tell you, there was this one time, unfortunately, some years ago, I had the luxury of spending a weekend in jail, in a Texas county jail somewhere.
Okay. Really? Well, it was different from prison, though.
Yeah, it wasn't prison, but certainly wasn't a walk in the park. It was no big deal, but the only book that was laying around there happened to be J.R.R. Tolkien's The Silmarillion.
Oh, that's as bad as the Bible.
Yeah, I was kind
of... I mean, I'm a nerd.
I was like, Tolkien, yes.
You're a Lord
like
of
this,
the Rings nerd.
The Silmarillion.
You
oh,
can't
man.
Stand it.
I know.
But at least it wasn't just the Bible.
I mean, yeah, my ring is Nenya, which, if you're a real Lord of the Rings nerd, you'll know is Galadriel's...
Yeah, ring. One of the Elven Rings.
One of the Elven Rings, so... But I couldn't read this Silmarillion, because the Bible is such a boring read, and so is that.
Yeah.
The Silmarillion is like the concordance of the
true story, but I read it, that's all I had to read, so now I can say...
Cover to cover?
Yeah, it was a whole weekend, so
but they
had
to put you in jail to get you to do it.
Yeah, right. But, I think this kind of reflects in general, I mean, my opinion on that, jail and the way the criminal justice system is handled in the U.S. and the Deep South, especially, tends to be a bit more draconian than I think the rest of the civilized world.
Yeah, maybe they put the Silmarillion in jail to sort of subdue their prisoners. Like, you know, they'll be too sleepy to start a rebellion. But I do think. You know, you may be right about the jails being a little more, like...
lenient?
No, less.
No, less lenient in the southern states. I was just listening to a... I just heard a story recently about a drug court where there's this judge who has basically decided that she can throw out all the normal rules of how to treat prisoners. And if you agree to do this drug court program, which is supposed to be basically a rehabilitation, she can just arbitrarily throw you in jail at any time. She can keep you on the program as long as she wants to.
Do you have a source for that?
Well, it's a show from This American Life a few weeks ago. And the show devoted the entire hour to basically some investigative reporting about what this judge was doing, and it's very interesting as a fan of This American Life in general. But I know you're dying to get to the Uganda story. Shall I?
Okay. Or do you...
Okay. We've talked about the Uganda Kill the Gays bill before. In Uganda, the anti-homosexuality bill, if enacted, would broaden the criminalization of homosexuality by introducing the death penalty for people who have previous convictions, are HIV positive, or engage in same-sex acts with people under 18 years of age. So any of the above. The bill also includes provisions for Ugandans who engage in same-sex sexual relations outside of Uganda, asserting that they may be extradited for punishment back to Uganda, and includes penalties for individuals, companies, media organizations, or non-government organizations that support LGBT rights. I don't seem to have the right story because there was some major action on happening here in the last week or two, and that is not what I'm looking at right now. So, stall with another story.
Oh, well, I thought you had it, so I didn't look it up.
Sorry. Quick, do something else.
Well, I know in Uganda and parts of Africa, AIDS has really been a big problem, and I wonder how much of that ties into that being a letting homosexuals become a scapegoat for that.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, if you heard that guy from Uganda being interviewed on Rachel Maddow a couple months ago, you know, he kept on falling back on these talking points like, you know, we are doing it to protect the children, and, you know, there is this terrible problem of the children being recruited by these gays, and it's just parroting right-wing talking points for something that doesn't actually happen.
Now, I imagine any normal right-thinking person would immediately condemn that. How quick has the religious right been to condemn this guy and speak out against him?
Well, I mean, it was an American group, the family, that actually sort of pushed these lawmakers, I mean, basically supported these lawmakers in the first place into getting this legislation through. But I'm seeing something else. It's from globalpost.com, so I've never heard of them. I don't know how reliable it is. Sorry.
I have a BBC.
Okay. Wait, that's just some guy rejecting it, right?
He's a pastor. Which immediately lends him credibility.
Yeah, but this thing actually claims that it looks like it's been shelved for now. And this is like breaking news from 2 days ago. Kampala, Uganda. Tired but elated, Kasha Jacqueline Nabagesera, a whip-thin 30-year-old Ugandan with long braids and a man's shirt, smoked cigarettes. Ah, too much flavor text. Ugandan lawmakers on Friday failed to debate a new anti-gay law proposed by an ambitious evangelical member of parliament that calls for the death penalty for some homosexual acts. Homosexual acts are already illegal in Uganda and many other African countries, but David Bahati's draft law would have meant the death sentence for teenagers who have gay sex, or people with HIV/AIDS, or with someone who is disabled for being what the bill termed a serial offender.
Let's see. The harsh proposals drew fire from human rights groups and foreign governments, but despite Friday's setback, the bill's chief proponent remained determined. When I moved this bill, I had two objectives, said Bahati. That is the guy who was in the interview, by the way. Standing outside the Parliament building hours after his bill had been shelved. One, to make the issue of homosexuality and the dangers to our society part of the national debate. And second, to have the legal framework to protect our children from recruitment and promotion. There he goes again. He said, referring to the belief widespread in Uganda that homosexuals want to brainwash children into becoming like them. So, it's been shelved. Good news for now.
I can't find it again, but I recently watched a kind of documentary from England about mm-hmm. them going to Uganda and talking to people on the streets and asking, you know, are you okay with homosexuality? What do you think should be done with them? And they all said no, and they said, you know, they should be locked up, they should be in prison, they should be killed. One lady said they should be killed, everything bad should be done to them.
Wow.
So it's this Christian influence where the Bible said, and they quoted the Bible, uh-huh. the Bible says that, you know, it's an abomination and you should kill them. This is something in their religion that they are taking literally, and they're not doing some kind of wishy-washy bones about it. There's been a very successful proselytizing effort over there, and this is the result of it, because it's the hardcore Christians that are spreading their message.
I imagine Uganda is one of the few countries to receive the approval of the Westboro Baptist Church. And they've stated many times that any country does not have the death penalty for homosexuals on the books is a godless country and deserves destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. They're the wrong tribe of Israel, though.
I'm sure there's some reason why the Westboros don't hang with them.
I don't know. That would be interesting.
I would give
their take on it.
And I would give most people that call themselves Christians the benefit of the doubt, and I would hope that they don't think that this is right in any way. But I think it's very interesting to look at Africa, because in the coming years, I think Africa is going to some degree, free itself of the poverty that's dogged it for so long, and hopefully, you know, develop more seriously as a world power. But it's interesting to note that a lot of Christians regard Africa as a very, very special place, undoubtedly because of the attempts for proselytizing that are there. I've heard Christians say before that they've had, more than once, in different ones, say they have a real passion for Africa and outreach there.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I have to hold my tongue because I'm compelled to say, well, yes, that's because, you know, where ignorance and poverty and lack of education exist, and yeah, it's ripe for spreading religious messages, isn't it?
Yeah, religion thrives where life sucks.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it preys on broken spirits, in my opinion, too.
So I would just like to say that I found the source for that video. It's The World's Worst Place to Be Gay? By BBC, and it was a documentary. And it
How
was
long
very
is it?
Interesting. I would say about 20 minutes. So he talks to some people on the street. He talks to some gay people who have been basically kicked out of their family and forced into slums. And he talks to the main pastor who's promoting this. And
you mean David Bahati?
I think it's David Bahati.
Okay.
That
guy is such an asshole.
The interviewer is actually gay himself, and he can't refrain from telling that guy. And the guy's just like, no, you're just horrible. You're spreading disease. You don't love people. And it's weird. But anyway, speaking of what you were saying with, you know, the poverty being linked to religion.
Mm-hmm.
The news.com. Oh, wait. No, that's the Pakistan again. The Times.
Of?
The Times.
The New York
Times. New York Times.
The good Times, not like the Washington Times.
Yes.
Which is owned by the crazy Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Not that Times.
Not that Times. They did a comparison of your religion to how wealthy you are. And no surprise, the more crazy fundy you are, the more poor you are. So down at the bottom of the barrel, we've got Pentecostals. They are the poorest
of, you don't say,
of them all. Then Jehovah's Witnesses, then the unaffiliated religious.
Where are the Amish on this list?
I don't think they count.
I don't know how you would even count that.
Oh, they have a furniture store here in town. They're not doing that bad.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Baptists, and then Muslims, Catholics, Mormons. Muslims, Catholics, Mormons are all kind of the national average.
Mm-hmm.
So then it gets wealthier. Methodists, Presbyterians, you know, the hippier Christians. Secular is kind of okay. We're a little bit above average.
Yeah, we're hovering right around the middle.
Right around the middle, yeah.
Right around the middle of above average.
Who's better than us?
Orthodox Buddhists, those are about the same.
Look at that, Hindus, right at the top. Almost.
Hindus are almost at the top.
Yeah, all the Indians in IT. Now, I'm not going to make racial generalizations, but that's what this thing is all about.
The wealthiest, no surprise, Reformed Jews.
It's true! The Jews do run everything! Yes. Where's my cut?
If only it was accompanied by an illustration with like some guy with a hooked nose and monocle and holding money bags in one hand and a globe in the other one.
I want your pound of flesh.
Interestingly enough, Reformed Jews are more wealthy than conservative Jews. So
marginally.
Marginally. So even there, you know, the more fundy you are, the less wealthy.
That's interesting, and it's in a source like the New York Times, so I'll give it some credibility.
What is this study from, though?
I'd be interested to see the data, and I think we also know that, you know, that it's hard to get an accurate count of who exactly secular or atheist.
It's from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, which is
a
pretty legit survey.
Yeah.
And then
it's probably about as accurate as you could hope to get it.
It makes some, footnotes, which is that religion is very often tied to geography.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of the...
It's another underlying
in the case of Pentecostals, for example, mm-hmm. I would say that there is a common cause of being Pentecostal and poor. I wouldn't say that being Pentecostal makes you poor. I would just say that both states tend to be found heavily in the southern regions.
Yeah, they also say there's a good tie between education and wealth, which is also tied to the religion.
Yes,
so.
Because Pentecostals are also morons, but
they're less educated.
But that's just a correlation. Being a moron.
Yeah, and then there are some outliers, which is all the hippie stuff, the Unitarians and Buddhists, and I guess Orthodox Christians. They all choose hippie jobs that don't make as much money.
Uh-huh.
So they sacrifice their wealth for the greater good. Yeah.
Not like those Jews. They go into finance.
Yeah, they just say, "I'll have everything for me."
Yep, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And we run Hollywood, and we eat and Christian babies.
No, those are atheists.
Oh.
I guess.
Well,
I mean,
we only eat Aryan Christian babies.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you have any other stories?
Well, I just think it's surprising how myths like that are able to take root.
Yeah.
Whether it's Jews eating Christian babies or the president being a Muslim or not being born in the U.S., you know.
I mean, I was saying to Linnea recently that I find anti-Semitism, like archaic anti-Semitist propaganda, really interesting. Like, I know I should be scared and creeped out by it, but I'm far enough removed from it by now that I've never felt particularly threatened as a non-practicing cultural extreme reform Jew. But, you know, it's interesting to look at examples of old prejudice, which just about everybody that we live near today can see it as incredibly irrational. And just the lengths that they would go to demonize these people. There's actually a comic strip that I've seen that is drawn by this kid who was adopted from Africa by a Jewish family and grew up to write these horrible, and like converted to Christianity, and writes these horrible, hateful comics where he has these, you know, straight out of Nazi Germany kind of portrayals of his Jewish dad as a fat guy with a hooked nose and an evil grin, who's always doing this awful stuff. And it's, I mean, to me, it just feels like you don't have it. The reason I found this comic strip was it was featured on Cracked, where they featured it because this guy has no idea how stupid he looks to everyone.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the there's one of the Chick Tracks.
Yes. Chick Tracks are a gold mine of that
stuff. It's entitled "Where's Rabbi Waxman?" And of course, if you read it, the answer is hell.
Of course.
He wound up in hell.
Yeah, and in one of the most famous Chick Tracks, the Big Daddy, which is all about evolution.
Yeah, the evolution.
The professor is a very big Jewish stereotype. And, and the Christian student who goes after him is this, you know, blonde, clean-cut.
Yeah, clean-cut, Aryan job kid.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
That one's been around for a while.
So, but, I mean, it's interesting what lengths people have to go to rationalize their random hatred.
It is, and I can speak a little bit from personal experience, and I can say that when I was as a young man, or a young adult, not even an adult, but in high school, you know, I had this very, very irrational prejudice against gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I didn't actually know anybody who was gay, or at least that I knew was gay.
Right.
I didn't think that I might be gay, or I wasn't confused or anything like that. But when I saw those, in the early 90s, when I saw these 2020 special about Fred Phelps, and, you know, his message kind of resonated, and I thought,
wow.
You know, and of course, I became a man and educated and grew out of that, thankfully. But for a time there, I was kind of really prejudiced against them, and I said some pretty, you know, awful things that sometimes people in high school remind me about, and I cringe, and I have to say, oh, I've changed since then. But I try to think back, and I try to think why I felt that way, and I think it's just a combination of there was kind of an ignorance, and it kind of felt good to, you know, to pin your dislike on some group or some people.
You know, gayness is for kids the one big sort of misunderstood boogeyman, because, you know, kids will always call stuff gay. Just as a generic term of, boy, that thing sucks. And I have to, you know, I deal with this like on online games, which I play a lot, where every once in a while my afternoon will be just ruined by accidentally getting involved in a game where there's some bratty little kid who says, you know, you're a faggot or something like that. And it's like, first of all,
and he doesn't necessarily mean you're a gay person, but you're just uncool for some reason, but he's equivocating it to that word.
Exactly. And it's like that's just sort of the generic term for something that you really don't like. And so it's easy to demonize gay people without even thinking about it. And if you correct somebody, like, what's wrong with being gay, you know.
I wouldn't say that that's just the generic term, because that didn't become a slur until recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wouldn't have become a slur if people didn't like gay people.
And it's interesting to think of the etymology of it, because first, the original meaning of the word gay, of course, is totally different. It just kind of means lighthearted and happy.
Yeah.
Then in the 60s, 50s and 60s, it came to mean, you know, homosexual, and throughout kind of the 80s and 90s, as it was being kind of abrogated, and then in recent years, it's easy just to say if something's not cool for whatever reason, just say, oh, that's gay. And I've been called out on that before, and I kind of had to change the way, because you don't just want to use the word, you know, as an equivocation for...
just so I can, I mean, if people do that, because I do the same games, and if people say, oh, that's gay, I'll say, yeah, but at least it wasn't hetero, or at least it wasn't heterosexual, or if someone says, faggot, I'll say, well, at least it's not a breeder.
Yeah, I think that might be lost on some of them, but maybe if it gets them to think twice.
I don't think they get the... They get the irony.
Well, that's because they're just dumbass breeders. I mean, yeah.
Right, but I also don't think that it's a good way to counter a stereotype.
Rise above it.
To
don't take
try
the
to create a hateful stereotype about...
It's not about creating the hateful stereotype about heterosexuals, even though they are incredibly filthy. Disgusting.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine
yeah.
you know, being attracted to the opposite sex. That's, what kind of perversion is that?
Right, right.
It's about pointing out how silly and stupid and nonsensical that kind of slur, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it like that when you were in school, though? I mean, was gay used as a slur a lot?
To some degree. You mean like when you just say, oh, that's gay, if something was...
Yeah, like, I mean, you said this that you were like this in high school, so... Do you think you were influenced by that sort of thing?
Not quite, no. I kind of had my attitudes coming into high school about that. But we'd say stuff like that. But to be honest, I don't really even know what I'd do if I met someone who said, I'm gay, what are you going to do about it? I probably would have been like, that's cool,
away.
Man. Take it easy. So luckily I don't think I ever felt anything that strongly about it, but it's just an attitude I had that nobody really countered, and luckily I grew out of it and educated myself.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that not countering it is harmful in a way. I mean, it's
exactly.
It's people trying to be, I mean, like, even when people disagree with you, they're trying to tread cautiously and not step on any toes or offend any sensibilities. But, like Linnea has said many times about her atheism, I mean, you've said that you were kind of annoyed at the atheists that you knew in the past who never corrected you or who never tried to get in that argument with you and approach the subject, and that you might have been an atheist a lot sooner than you were.
Too true. And I mean, just like not correcting people when they say these kinds of things makes it seem like it's an okay thing. And I can transition to a story about gayness in high school, which I think is pretty awesome. So this comes from frontiersmen.com, which sounds very bear gay. WHS choir school caught in landslide over Queen song.
What's
Queen
WHS? What's the name of the school?
Wasilla High School.
Wasilla, hometown of Sarah Palin?
That's
the same one?
I'm not sure. Which
is that out of Alaska? If it's a frontiersman, I think it is.
Yeah, I guess it would be. I'm going to say
near and dear to her heart.
When members of the Wasilla High School Symphonic Jazz Choir heard Friday, it wouldn't be singing the popular Queen hit Bohemian Rhapsody at this year's graduation ceremony. After working on it all year, the students couldn't get their heads around it. WHS Principal Dwight Probasco reportedly had received complaints from at least one parent.
At least one.
At least one. So that one was just really nagging about it. That the 1975 hit written by Freddie Mercury wasn't appropriate for the ceremony simply because Mercury was gay.
But Bohemian Rhapsody was in Wayne's World. How can you be more all-American than that?
Wayne's World.
And I don't recall that song having any gay overtones at all.
There's a okay.
I felt like the school was discriminating for sexual orientation, and I felt it was wrong, Height said on Monday. It's one of the choir members, a junior. And they contacted the ACLU. They first checked out a GLBT organization in Anchorage, and they told them to go to the ACLU. ACLU complained that was, you know, discrimination and not okay. So they said that you can perform that at the graduation as long as you leave out a verse about murder, about being killed.
But that's got nothing to do with their original complaint. They just sort of made up some other thing to cover their tracks.
Yep, they're just trying to backpedal and say, you know,
put a gun against his head. Hold my trigger, now he's dead.
Well, this is interesting. Just last Friday night, I was privileged to see a local Queen tribute band from here in Austin. They're called Magnifico.
All right.
They did an excellent version of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, good.
So I'm pretty fresh with the song in my head still. But, yeah, kind of ridiculous. I remember that when Freddie Mercury died and the whole thing, his being gay. Because that was during my time where I didn't particularly like gays for whatever foolish reason I had. Yeah. But I couldn't deny that Queen was still a totally rocking band.
Yeah.
I mean, what high school group, I mean, what set of high school students ever goes without hearing We Will Rock You?
Yeah, or We're the Champion, you know, We Are the Champions.
Yeah. I'm glad that these high school students spoke out against this. And
that's interesting, though, in Wasilla. I'll have to check Sarah Palin's Twitter page to see if she weighed in on this latest controversy.
Yes, it's just so arbitrary. I mean, there is not a thing in that song that you can take seriously.
Nope. Well, yeah, I guess at least one parent did. And that's all it takes. And that's kind of scary. That they'll just bow to one parent complaining.
Was it somewhere around here that some high school had an atheist group wanted to set up a table and have an Ask an Atheist thing? And
not here. It was somewhere else. You mean the place where the student stabbed himself with a pen?
I don't know about that. All I know is at least some parents complained about it. Like, I can't believe my child was exposed to atheism.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. The pen incident was on a college campus, and this was in a regular school. I mean, a lower level
primary school.
Yeah. Schools want to avoid controversy.
It was in Illinois.
Right.
Larkin High School in Elgin, Illinois. And that's from Friendly Atheist.
Oh, thank you, Hemant.
Thanks again. Yes, Hemant. When Beth puts together the news of the week, half of it always comes from Friendly Atheist.
Well, it's a good source.
Friendly.
He's like the new aggregator of atheist news.
Yeah, I totally know what's going on because I'm a friend of Beth Presswood on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true.
She keeps us in the loop.
She is pretty active. Okay, so here's a sillier story. North Shore realtors relying on witchcraft to help home sales. From CBS Boston.
In a down economy, you do what you gotta do.
Yeah, well, again, when times are tough, people take comfort in telling themselves bullshit. In Salem, no less, actually. Which makes this doubly amusing. For sale, historic Linfield single-family house. 5 beds, 1.5 baths, about 2,500 square feet, and it's recently been blessed, room to room, by a local witch. Lori Bruno, a Salem-based psychic and witch, says when she first stepped into the Salem Street house, she felt sadness. I says, it can't be. Is that a typo, or does she have a silly dialect?
It's in quotes, so I think they were obligated to print it as it was stated.
So she said about cleansing the circa 1840 property in a process involving holy water, kosher salt, a candle, incense, and much chanting. That's just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, right.
Come on. That kosher salt would be better served pressed into a prime rib.
Yeah, we've got some over there.
Or sprinkled over the goat that you sacrificed.
Yeah.
The blessing cleanses the house and readies it for sale as well as prepares it for future occupants. 15 days later, the house, which had been under foreclosure, was sold. That's no surprise to Janet Howcroft of Five Star Realty, who has used Bruno's skills about 24 times in the last year. The Peabody realtor says Bruno has a perfect record.
Yeah. Not surprising.
Yeah.
I wonder how much Bruno's services are compensated.
Yeah, you know, homes will sell eventually, so it's not like she goes in and blesses a house and then it never, ever sells.
I wonder if she gets a cut of the realtor's take.
Oh, I bet she... Well, I mean, they pay her to do this blessing stuff, so... I mean, but... If you wanted to do a scientific test of this, which, of course, they don't,
you would take a random sampling of houses around the same time, including houses she has blessed, and then compare the amount of time it takes them to sell and the amount of you know, difference between the sale price and the expected market price. But, again, of course, they don't.
I think it says at the bottom she refuses to take any money.
She refuses to take any money. Oh, no. Instead, she asks people to donate to a local charity.
So maybe that was presumptuous of me to assume.
Yeah.
But even still, the basic message.
Wiccan people tend to be, if that's the kind of witch she is, they tend to be very hippie-ish.
I guess.
So, good on her.
Well, I mean, that's one thing, although that wouldn't endear her to Ayn Rand. But I really like the first comment on this article, which is, I find it disturbing that a witch-slash-psychic would be consulted by any professional, particularly to bless a home. Wait for it. The only person I'd ever let do this would be a Christian who has a solid relationship with Jesus Christ, preferably a pastor. That's another case where it's like, this gibberish is completely unbelievable. Believe my gibberish instead.
Yeah.
Too rich.
The wrong kind of witch.
Too rich.
Ronnie's got to be a Christian witch.
Well, it's an interesting point, and I think it brings up this this idea that a lot of people have, that places and homes can be, this idea that they have, that these places can be visited or inhabited by whether it's negative energy, spirits, whatnot. And I personally know people that that have had experiences that they claim that are like that. You know, some people here in town, you know, close to me, I love them. But I think part of the reason they sold their house was, you know, I heard them talking in confidence with some other other Christians. Where they more the gist of it was that they sincerely believed the house was possessed to some degree.
Wow.
You know, and at one point their dog freaked out and was trying to get out, and you know, who knows? It's a real idea that inhabits people's minds. So it's definitely out there, and like you pointed out, you know, the first guy to comment on there, he thought it was ridiculous, and then he turned right around and said, "I'd only let a pastor do it."
Yeah, which of course is supposed to seem less ridiculous to anybody because his ridiculousness is held by the majority of people.
Right.
So if you were an unscrupulous sort, if you could somehow establish that a house is, you know, establish in certain people's minds that a house is haunted, and you're willing to take the hit on it and buy it anyway at a discount, of course, you'd be doing them a favor.
Mm-hmm. Who are you gonna call? Discount realtors.
Yeah, but it's a real idea that's out there that people have. Unfortunately, it has no basis other than superstition. But
yeah, another quick note about superstition and magic and incantations is, for a while, Mike Huckabee was asking people to prayerfully that he was prayerfully considering an important decision about seeking the office of the president in the 2012 election. So he was asking people to write for him and say that, yes, they would pray for that to happen. And he says, let's pray for God's mercy on America. Pray that he will heal our land. Pray that I will hear the still small voice of the Holy Spirit as he leads my step according to his will. Thank you, and may God bless you and keep you. And then Mark Huckabee is not running for president in 2012. So, apparently, God, yeah, the prayers did not work, or the prayers were that he
maybe
would
have got a hint, you know, hint that time wasn't
it all
right.
Happens according to God's will, right? I mean, God answers all prayers. Sometimes he answers yes, and sometimes he answers go fuck yourself, Mike.
Sometimes he answers with silence.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I personally, I like Mike as a Huckabee as an individual, and I think he's when he's on Jon Stewart and those other shows, he's interesting. But then when his views come out, it's you know, it's
so
obvious where he's coming from.
You would have a beer with him, but you wouldn't want him running anything.
Yeah, I'd have a beer with former President Bush.
I've seen him appear on many shows, and in many cases, he's managed to seem very lovable.
It's, I mean, it's
but
a,
then
it's
I
a
see
skill
Dave,
politicians
I see, then I see Jon Stewart confronting him about this David Barton shit, which
I remember that.
You know,
that was
Huckabee
good.
Thinks that people that school kids should be taught David Barton history at gunpoint, or I mean, you know, that's hyperbole, obviously, but. Nobody should allow anything by David Barton anywhere near a classroom.
And he's a politician, so I'm sure he's good at being charming somewhat. But yeah, apparently he's not going to run, huh?
Nope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but, don't assume that of all politicians. Look at Dick Cheney.
He didn't even bother to put on the veneer of being a nice guy.
But then he didn't have to run for anything himself.
No, he never did.
No, he was senator, wasn't he?
I don't think he was. I don't think he was senator.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
But that'll be interesting to see in the coming year. Next year, of course, is going to be an election year, isn't it? And that's
we're going to have all
total crazy time
about.
In the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah. It won't matter because the world will have ended already.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And if it hasn't ended from the rapture next week, we have the whole 2012 coming.
Yeah, the Mayan thing.
Yeah, so
that's at the end of the year, though.
Yeah.
So having reminded people that this is the last show ever, do we want to throw in any last-minute stories to tide them over in their journey to the afterlife?
I'll just add that when I was a child, I remember a pamphlet going around that was called 88 Reasons Why the Rapture Will Be in 1988. And being somewhat less developed and not having the critical thinking skills I do now, it scared the shit out of me. And I'm still a little bit resentful about that because I really wondered where my cat would do when I left, assuming that
you were going to be raptured.
Yeah, right. Well, I was a kid. Kids get a free pass, right?
Yeah,
I was told that in Sunday school.
That's true. Kids,
kids to some degree until they reach, like, I don't know. If you're smarter and with a kid like Ben, he's probably too old and too smart to get a free pass now and do that.
I just think it's kind of funny to contemplate the idea that, like, maybe there really was a rapture in the, you know, like in the 1950s or something.
Yeah.
And there were so few people that nobody noticed it, but all the people who are running around talking are like, have missed the boat already.
That'd be a good premise. That'd be way better than Left Behind.
we'll be back again. Never, but on the off chance that
it could happen,
that the world is still here in 2 weeks, there should be an official show from Dillahunty International Studios. So thanks, Linnea and Jay.
Thanks, Russell.
That was
show.
Fun.
Yeah,
and
it'd be fun to be back.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.